afternoon, Chicago. Good afternoon, Washington, D.C. Good afternoon, Baltimore. Good morning, Las Vegas. Good afternoon, San Diego. Good afternoon, San Francisco. Good afternoon, United States of America. Good morning, United States of America.
And good morning, Teller.
Good morning, Lance Burton. Oh, it's a fine day here in Vegas. Do you like it? Like, kind of like a nippy out here?
It is blowing 100 miles an hour and freezing.
It's way
it's a lovely day
way,
out there.
Way, way cold. It's just stupid cold in Las Vegas. And we were just talking to New York, and it's sunny and nice
yeah,
there. And
of course.
Cold in Las Vegas.
Perfect.
And why the hell would you live in Las Vegas unless it was going to be warm?
It's the weather.
Yeah, you might as well live in New York. As a matter of fact, I mean, with all due respect to D.C. and Chicago, which are great cities, and San Francisco, which is okay. New York is really the city. I mean, I loved living in New York when I was there.
I haven't lived there.
You never lived there?
No.
It's great.
Would you say I lived in Madison Square Garden for 3 months, but that's not really.
We're going to get back to clown
qualify.
Sex.
Yeah,
we're
we
going to get right back to clown sex.
Sorry.
How long was Ringling at the Madison Square Garden?
The year I was there was 12 weeks in
12
Madison
weeks.
Square Garden.
Madison Square Garden. Did you get to go out to the city? No, you were doing...
Yeah.
How many shows a week?
Great stuff. Wow, 13.
13
shows 3.5 hour shows a week. Yeah, it was a good job. And I was making $130 a week.
And do you still live in the clown car?
Yeah, you had the choice of being on the train, or if you were really a radical, you could sleep in the clown alley at Madison Square Garden. So
which did you do?
I slept in clown alley Madison Square Garden quite a bit.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It was Manhattan. I went out, you know.
So we were, you know, when we played San Francisco, we played this, no. Yes, L.A. We played this great place called the Wilshire Theater, but the Wiltern.
Mm-hmm.
The Wiltern, really big
the Wiltern,
theater.
Yeah.
And they had a huge dressing room. The dressing room was enormous. It had like a three-room dressing room. It was like a suite. It was like they thought it was Celine Dion or something. I passed off
that
myself.
Was a typo.
And so I wanted to stay there. You know, I wanted to stay there
right.
all the time, stay
mm-hmm.
there at night instead of having it in a hotel room and an apartment.
Sure.
I thought it would be really cool to just be able to go out and come back to the theater. And then they told me that I would have to have a guard on 24 hours because they need to have a guard when it was unlocked. And I said, okay, I'll pay the guard. And they weren't ready for that. You know, that was supposed to stop me. And they still stopped me because then they said, you'd have to pay the guard. I said, okay, I'll pay the guard. They said, okay, then no.
You called their bluff.
Yeah, and they just... It didn't work to call their bluff. They just said no. So the show yesterday, we talked a lot about circumcision. Maybe enough for an hour radio show. Maybe we covered circumcision.
You think we're beating
enough?
A dead horse on that one?
And we also talked about Peter, I can see your house from up here.
Yes, we did.
Which we said was a Jesus joke. And a guy wrote in. This guy, John Fisher, wrote
John
in.
John Fisher, yeah.
I wrote us a Gmail.
Says, you know, why can't Jesus eat M&Ms? Because they fall through the holes in his hands.
Nobody
claims that's the better joke.
Nobody, we didn't say. He wrote in, incidentally, to penradio, PENNRADIO, at gmail.com. That's where he wrote into this John Fisher joker. we're also at penradio.com. Well, he is a joker. He's talking about jokes, right?
He's talking about jokes.
I didn't mean that in an unpleasant
way.
All right. I mean, if there's one thing you are, it's a joker.
That's true.
No, it's okay. But he wrote in and tried to claim that we said that, Peter, I can see your house. What are the last 10 words Jesus spoke on the cross? Peter, I can see your house from up here.
Mm-hmm.
He claimed we said that was the best crucifixion joke. And he writes in to say, why does Jesus hate M&Ms? Because they fall through the holes in his
head.
And if he wants to be, if he wants to be contentious about this, if he wants to call me out
right.
on this particular thing, that is not the way the joke goes. See, this is what drives me nuts. This joke is a beautifully crafted joke. Why does Jesus hate Easter? Because the jelly beans fall through his hands. It doesn't need a product placement. That's not
right.
a joke with the product placement of M&Ms.
Right.
And also,
you
I
have
guess,
the misdirection of the Easter thing. And
yeah,
the whole,
yeah.
You know.
And also, you know, M&Ms, I guess you have the image of melt in your mouth, not in your hands. So the hand image is there. That might bump it up a little bit. But it does not trump
the Easter implications.
The Easter implications and just the jelly beans. And jelly beans
falling, maybe M&M is actually putting this out.
Falling through holes in the hands, I think it's a funnier image. Just a little bit funnier.
Okay.
Just because they're a little bit oval. You know, they're a different shape than
Well, you
the
know,
M&M.
As long as you're going to get so technical, we have another letter who's correcting
you. Now, this is, I think, proving.
Eric is right here.
Proving beyond a shadow of a doubt that analyzing comedy is really funny. We're going to go on with more of
exactly.
this. Go ahead.
Eric Trainer says, Peter, I can see your house from here, tries too hard to get in 10 words. He suggests, Peter, I think I can see your house from here.
Oh, yes.
So that's a perfect, and he's right.
Yeah.
You know, and as he points out, the I think gives this atheist a grin as it puts doubt into Jesus' all-knowing perfection. So in the last 10 words of Jesus, he was also not sure he could see Peter's house.
Oh, that is much better. Give that man an Aristocrats DVD. His name is Eric?
Eric Trainer.
Oh, Eric, write to us again with stuff.
Send us your email and your real address.
That is a perfectly crafted Gmail.
That's right.
Perfectly crafted. He improves on a joke and gives his reasons. And his reasons are really, really deep and wonderful.
That is.
So it's, Peter, I think I can see your house from here.
That's it.
So you don't need to remember the up or the double Peter.
That's right.
All right. Peter, I think I can see your house from here. Now, we're working on the death penalty BS script for for Showtime. Change the punchline to that.
Okay, I better pull that one back out of the trash.
Change the punchline. Let's have
now, are we going to have to credit Eric on the show now?
I think that's public domain.
All right.
But we're crediting him now. Thanks a lot.
And you're getting screwed, man. Eric, get an attorney.
866-313-FREE. 866-313-FREE. That's 3733 is what spells free. We're on Free FM, Michael Goodell.
Yes, we are.
Know.
I didn't know.
Tell them Jesus jokes on Free FM. There's also other news about Jesus, because, you know, he's a newsworthy guy.
He's in the news today.
Kind of, sort of. I mean, the Catholic Church, you know about this? The Catholic Church.
I did see this.
The Catholic Church has come out. Now, this is the thing that drives me nuts. I mean, as though there weren't enough things that drove me nuts about religion. The Catholic Church does this weird weasel thing. They've got this thing where they said that the court decision was in North Carolina.
Yeah.
North Carolina, is that what it
is? I don't know.
That said that intelligent design didn't belong in science class. Ooh, that was a squeaker. That was a tough one. They said, now.
What they say is intelligent design does not belong to science, and there is no justification for the demand it be taught as scientific theory alongside Darwinian explanations.
Yeah, but this is not the Catholic Church saying this. You know, the Catholic Church has many different little offsprings. So this is from, I think this is from Il Cipolla, which is the Catholic Church's The Onion.
Il Cipolla.
Yeah. Robbie Libman told me the Italian word for onion, so I thought that.
And you didn't check that, did you? Might not be. I hope it's not.
But wouldn't it be funny if the Vatican had Il Cipolla? I bet he looked it up. Robbie is, you know, a Google freak. So yes. he looked it up. He found out. But this drives me crazy. So the Catholic Church is saying that, sure, we're down with evolution. Now, this is the same Catholic Church that bought the Adam and Eve thing, right?
Yeah.
So now the Catholic Church is saying that Adam and Eve is absolutely false. Is that what they're saying?
I don't think that's what they're saying.
Okay. What are they saying?
They're not saying anything. They're saying we can't argue with evolution, I believe, is
But
then
they have a phrase in there.
Evolution?
Intelligent project. Didn't they use the word project?
Yes, yes. The humans are a project.
God's project?
Yes, yes. A project.
But God's art project? Or?
Life is so complex that it needs a supernatural creator, and it's part of God's project. You
know? Whoa. What would it say? Life is so complex? Now, first of all, they say that evolution, which is not argued with by anybody that's in science, seriously, right? First of all, they say that should be taught in schools, and it does say this, and then they say it's too complex for that. Which is, I mean, isn't the Catholic Church? Isn't the Catholic Church?
What the heck happened there?
I get so shook up about this. Isn't the Pope infallible?
I don't know.
The one that was in the one that was a member of Hitler Youth.
He chose Benedict as a name, and I like Eggs Benedict, so
yeah, sure.
He's already higher on my list than the last guy.
Right. He was also a member of was he a member of Hitler Youth?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, but no one cared about that.
No, that was okay.
Which is okay.
He was forced into that.
By the Nazis. So being in Hitler Youth is exactly the same as being in Auschwitz as a prisoner, right? In his mind,
I think so. Yes.
You're forced. You have no choice. You're forced. But what they do with religion is they do this thing in the margins.
Right.
You know, whatever we don't understand, that's the church, right? So when we didn't understand anything, you know, before Darwin, before mm-hmm. Copernicus, then everything about our Earth being the center of the universe.
Sure. Made by God.
Yeah, all this. And then it just keeps going smaller and smaller and smaller. And the Catholic Church now knows that. So now they run for the margins and they hide there. They're hiding in the margins, the Catholic Church.
What's the option? You know, the option is, we were wrong, sorry.
Yeah.
And they're not going to do that.
But that's
perfect. It took them 4 years to apologize to Newton.
Yeah. How long? Not 400 years.
Crazy. Not Newton.
Who?
The other guy.
He apologized to Newton. Copernicus?
Copernicus? Not to Copernicus either. Man, you're killing me. Galileo!
Here's what we want out of the Catholic Church. We want the Catholic Church to do exactly what we're going to do right now and say, we're wrong.
We're wrong about everything.
We don't know what we're talking about. We have no idea. But the one thing advantage we have is, do we ever claim infallible?
No.
Did I ever come on the radio and say, hi, this is Ben Gillette and Michael Goudeau, we're infallible?
I don't think
we're talking directly to God.
I don't listen to you all the time. You might have said that.
I don't think I did. Anyway, the Catholic Church, evolution is, it's not a theory. It's a fact. And it's the use of the word theory that makes me nuts. There's a very specific scientific use of the word theory, and then it's also used colloquially as
a guess.
As a guess. Yeah, this is my theory on who's going to win American Idol. That's the way it's used colloquially. It's not the way it's used in science. A theory is something you just keep testing and banging against.
And as science goes, this is one of the more robust theories ever.
Sure.
I mean, it's supported by everything.
Everything.
Everything we didn't know. We knew nothing about genetics. Darwin knew nothing about genetics when he postulated evolution.
Right.
And yet it came along later and supported it. That's what science does.
What science does is gets a theory and just bangs at it and tries to prove it false.
Hits it with hammers till it breaks.
That's one of my favorite Einstein quotes, is when Einstein did the, I don't even know whether it was special relativity or whether it was E some square. I think it was special relativity.
Mm-hmm.
There was a book that was going to come out called 100 Scientists Prove Einstein Wrong. And they ran up to him, you know, I guess he was at a... My image of this is that he was on the red carpet going to a Johnny Depp movie opening or something, but that's probably not true. But my image is that Einstein's going somewhere with mm-hmm. Marilyn Monroe or something.
Sure.
And they run up to him and say, what do you think of this book, 100 Scientists Prove Einstein Wrong? And Einstein responded, one. It only takes one.
Yeah. And then, welcome to science. And we give you the award. We give you the highest award for proving us wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, and Dawkins, Richard Dawkins, who is the Darwin Chair at Oxford, mm-hmm. and a groovy guy, and a friend of ours, and he wrote The Blind Watchmaker. And The Blind Watchmaker is, if you haven't read The Blind Watchmaker, no matter who you are, reading The Blind Watchmaker is a fabulous thing. And as you told Lance Burton, if you read the first chapter of The Blind Watchmaker and don't throw it away and burn it, you're automatically going to hell. There's no way out.
For you and I, what's another foot down? But for Lance... That's a big loss.
That's a big loss. But Richard Dawkins, you know, tells this beautiful story that when he was a student, there was a professor that had a pet theory that he'd have for 50 years on something in biology that he talked about all the time, was always working on, professor from the USA came over to England to speak. And while he was speaking, completely and utterly disproved the professor's pet theory that he'd had his whole life. And Dawkins said he walked up, shook the man's hand, and said, thank you for proving me wrong, as there was thunderous applause in the classroom. That's the way science works, you know? The way science works is a celebration of finding the truth. closer to the truth. Not necessarily the way the Catholic Church works, which is preserving
evolution.
I wonder what Il Cipolla does mean, because Robbie could have set me up very easily. Other stuff we talked about yesterday was the face transplant woman. Remember that?
Yes.
And she was walking around the town with Rod Serling. And I talked a lot yesterday about Rod Serling being a smoker. And the big news of the
She has returned to smoking. Apparently, she was a smoker before the attack, and now she's back to smoking.
And the press is like...
she's French.
Yeah, French, you got to smoke. But she's... they're also reporting this like, isn't this ironic that she got a new face and now she's smoking?
And yet she's smoking, as if smoking was responsible.
Right. It was her pet dog. You know that? It was her pet dog that ripped
her face off.
Her dog bit her face off. You know, and you know that I'm not fond of dogs. And probably, and I want to just say this, I'm okay with other people have dogs.
Sure, this is a personal taste issue.
Don't write in. Because here we are saying, you know, there's no God, that Jesus is best for jokes, you know, that Muslims shouldn't be circumcised. We're saying all this stuff, and then people will write in and go, what does he mean he doesn't like little cuddly dogs? They're so cute. What bothers me, I'll tell you, what bothers me about dogs is not the dogs. What bothers me about dogs is the owners. The transference of affection that I feel was made for our offspring to an animal that was bred over centuries to suck up to us. You know, that's, you know, they take the pack instinct. It's bred to suck up to us. It always makes me feel a little creepy.
You and I are on exactly opposite of this. I think breeding them so that they suck up is great.
You don't find it creepy?
I'm trying to find a dog that will do my feet, you know, massage my feet or something. That's the genetic breeding I'm looking for.
Did you have something else in mind?
No, I didn't.
It sounded like you were heading somewhere.
I was not.
And then you thought you're on national radio and you probably should have said it.
I was thinking of just general massage, but you were thinking of something else.
Trying to breed a dog that will massage my feet. I'm trying to talk off the top of my head.
You know, it's not enough caffeine in the tea this morning.
So I find the way people treat dogs to be a little creepy. It bothers me, you know. And I like the fact that I didn't warm up my affection for my daughter, warm it up on an animal. You know, the only animals that live at the Slammer we have some fish and some turtles in the pond, because they don't react to you. There's no sucking up in a turtle.
A lot of running,
a lot of flipping over, a lot of doing funny stuff, a lot of looking like Bruce Valanche on on an escalator, a lot of looking cute. The face transplant woman is smoking. We don't care as long as she doesn't get a dog
with her new lips.
As long as she doesn't get a dog, she can be followed around with Rod Serling, Sharon. In a pack of Pall Malls or whatever they smoked. I don't know what the brand was that Serling smoked. I used to know, but that's the kind of precision that goes away as you get older. You might forget what brand Walt Disney smoked. Do you know what brand Walt Disney?
I do not know.
What brand Rod Serling smoked?
No. Nope.
That would be a good Gmail for someone to send in. There must be someone out there
who is
a collector of cigarette brands of celebrities that died of things that might have been related to cigarette smoking. This is Penn Jillette rambling on Free FM. Michael Goudeau helping me ramble. We're going to be back. We're going to talk about, lobbying or Wendy's chili or the Beastie Boys. That's some of the stuff on my list. Okay, see you soon. Phones right away.
Why
here. Why not? We were kind of talking in circles. Let's go to the phones. Lisa on line 8. Come on. Talk to us.
Hello.
How you doing, boss?
There's Lisa.
All right. How are you?
Never better.
Love your show.
Oh, thanks so much, Lisa.
Well,
you gonna say something?
Joke to you that my mother told on Easter.
Oh, it's a Jesus joke, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Or a funny joke, either one.
Lay it on us, Lisa.
All right. Jesus walks into the inn and throws some nails on the counter and says, can you put me up for the night?
That's a good one. That's a good one. Not one we haven't heard. You know, we know that one very well. You know, there's also the Jesus biting his nails where you bite your palm. And someone sent in another one, didn't they?
Yeah, the painting. What's the difference between Jesus and a painting?
Right. Only takes
one nail to put up a painting. So.
But you told that on Easter. Were you raised Christian Catholic?
Actually Lutheran, but not really. and yeah, I don't Lutheran, follow it now at all.
Lutheran, but not really. Where are you at, Lisa? Where are you listening to us?
Right now, I'm at JFK Airport.
Where are you flying?
I'm not flying anywhere. I do shipping. I'm in the shipping business.
So. Oh, cool.
Oh,
cool,
you're just hanging out there. It's like the terminal.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Lisa. That is a really fine, that's a fine,
joke.
Straightforward Jesus joke.
That's like that her mom told it to her. That sounds like a cool thing.
It's her Lutheran mom.
Her Lutheran mom.
And Lutheran's a tough one. Lutheran, I think they have an 11th commandment, thou shalt not have fun. They're a dour bunch. But, you know, Bach was a Lutheran.
Well, there you go.
And Bach wrote some good music. And Bach also, there's more and more stuff coming out now about Bach maybe having indiscretions with people in the choir loft.
Other Lutherans?
Yeah, well, maybe he did some. He was actually thrown out of one church or something for that. But he wrote great music. Lutheran, whether he was a Lutheran or not. You had another
Gmail. We have a Gmail from Tom.
Come on, Tom.
And Tom says one of his coworkers is extremely intelligent but very religious. Mm-hmm. When I bring up such explanations as the Big Bang, she argues that God is responsible for the Big Bang. Same thing with evolution, that God created evolution, and he is the reason it worked. How can I argue with this?
Well, you know, I think you can't argue at all unless you start with some basic ground rules, which is that explanations should give you some sort of answer.
Right.
And once you answer anything with God did it, especially in terms of creation, then you have the question that any six-year-old will ask you, which is, who created God?
Yeah, who's stronger, Superman or God?
Yeah, and if you say that, well, God's always been there, then the question of how did we get here is not in any way been answered. Not even slightly. So what you're saying when God started that is essentially, it's the same argument as sticking your fingers in your ears and going, la, 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 I'm not listening, I'm not listening, I'm not listening.
Which, by the way, I find extremely intelligent and very effective.
Very good answer.
Yeah, I'm rubber very glue is the other one that I use.
Yeah. But, you know, that's a really good question, because if you look at serious scientists, like people that win Nobel Prizes and stuff, the number of atheists is in the majority.
Way high, yeah.
Way high. And the number of believers is low. But that doesn't mean, and you know, the Time magazine every year does, you know, 10 top scientists tell you why they believe in God. And it's always like, you know, the top scientists are from community colleges. You know? It's never 10 Nobel Prize winners tell you why they believe in God. But all that aside, and all the jokes aside, there are some really wicked smart people who believe in God. Wicked, wicked smart. I want to be very, I'd be trying to be very New England on you here.
Why wicked, are you saying wicked?
Because I want to be New England. You know, really smart. That's what wicked means. Really.
That's what it means.
Wicked
no,
means
wicked.
Really. Wicked smart. You know, wicked piss of smart.
Hey, Tim Kate says that Sterling smoked Oasis.
Oasis? Oasis. Are they still being made?
I don't know.
Oasis. Boy. What's the guy's name?
Oh, no. Just
okay, it's okay. You deleted it. Fine.
Torture me.
That's, but sometimes I'm not done right away. You know, I'm not really done right away. I like to know who's writing to us. I like to know their names. It makes me feel kind of
cuddly. Oh, wait. Here's another one from Paul E. Sasby. Sabby? Sabby? C-S-A-B-Y. As part of the contract with one of the sponsors of The Twilight Zone, Season 3, Rod Serling had to pitch Oasis and Chesterfield cigarettes.
I thought he smoked Chesterfield.
Well, apparently he was doing both in the show. So
yeah, he always has a cigarette and those things. And you know, Stephen Banks, who I talk about a lot, who's the head writer on SpongeBob. SpongeBob, who was in trouble.
SpongeBob's in trouble. That's
SpongeBob's
right.
In big trouble. Stephen Banks had nothing to do with it. But Stephen Banks' dad, we'll get to SpongeBob in a second. Stephen Banks' dad is an artist and worked for Disney Studios.
Uh-huh.
And he told me, and he's probably just tugging me, you know, because everybody lies to me.
Why not?
Why, it's so fun to lie to me, because then I repeat it all over the place. I'm the Typhoid Mary of bad information. I just spread those memes all over the place. But he told me that his father, one of his jobs, not his total job, but one of the jobs he had as an artist for Disney, was airbrushing cigarettes out of the photographs of Walt Disney that were going to go out, the press pictures. And if you go to the web and you type in Walt Disney and hit images on Google,
mm-hmm.
And you'll see pictures of Walt Disney with the two fingers up as though not making an obscene gesture in Italy, nor making a peace sign or victory sign. But he's holding the two fingers in that position where a cigarette just would rest. And he was such a chain smoker, he wouldn't even put down a cigarette for the photo. They would airbrush it out later. Like John Cougar Mellencamp, John Declan McManus, whatever his name is, the whole day. I guess he's no longer John Cougar, he's just John Mellencamp.
Mm-hmm.
Mellencamp. Now he's Camp. I read an interview with him where he said he had to get up to smoke. He had to wake up and set an alarm.
Wow.
Yeah, to smoke because the nicotine the urgings were so great. I mean, that's a really powerful drug, although not as powerful or as quickly addictive as caffeine. I don't drink caffeine either. As we sit here, I'm drinking decaffeinated tea.
I'm having real tea.
You're putting the caffeine down. But what was I saying?
Well, Walt Disney. Walt Disney smoked
Jetan,
a French brand, apparently.
Oh, this is so great. I mean, this
that's
is
from
the
David
greatest
Roy.
Thing. What I think you should do, everybody, is get a radio show.
Yeah.
Because then you can ask questions, and it's like the people sitting around you know everything. I mean, this is the greatest thing about this show. I feel like we're sitting, like, at a Starbucks somewhere, except there are, like, hundreds of people at the table, and you can bring up a subject, and someone chimes in. So, Jetan for Walt. So, he not only smoked cigarettes all the time. He smoked foreign cigarettes?
That's right.
I mean, it must be American tobacco, right? They don't grow tobacco in France. See, another question. Another question about, I don't think of the tobacco farms of outside of the Champs-Élysées. There's nothing tobacco. Because tobacco, you know, you usually think of that as being in, Raleigh and down
sure.
Carolinas. But we had a big tobacco in Greenfield, Massachusetts. The tobacco barns is where people worked. I worked the cucumber fields. I did. I would hoe in the cucumber fields. I was a hoe. I was a whore.
You were the hoer in the cucumber fields.
I was the cucumber hoer.
You're just lying to me this morning.
No,
aren't
this
you?
Is true.
You just
this
lost
is true.
Your mind.
And the thing my dad was proudest of is that when I was like 14, and I would go out and hoe in the cucumber farms for the, I think it was the Comeskis or something, was the family that owned them. And I was taking too many breaks. I would go over and get water much too often, put down my hoe, and head over to get some water. And they told me to not stop, and if I stopped for anything, that I would be fired.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, so I would keep hoeing. And their daughter, who was my age, their daughter passed out from the heat in the field, and I stepped over her and kept hoeing so I wouldn't be fired. So she stayed unconscious with some sort of heat. She ended up being fine. But my dad told that story all the time of his son. Because the combination of laziness and disregard for other human beings really tickled my dad. My dad, just a hero to me. Because when I played Little League, and I was terrible at Little League, and I hated it.
Yeah, me too.
My dad would sit in the stands and say to all the fathers, see that guy out there in center field who just dropped the ball? That's my son. And I'm so proud of him, because he's not going to grow up to be a sports nut like you. That was his attitude. He was just so, so cool about that. So we had tobacco up in Greenfield, Massachusetts. But the tobacco that Walt Disney smoked, Walt Disney's a great American, you know. I mean, he even had, you know the quote of Walt Disney that's so fascinating? He had a quote of Walt Disney's that I believe is true. I believe this is true.
Cold in here?
Yeah.
It
is frozen coffin.
I can't believe he said that.
Walt Disney said about Jews, those people will never work here.
Really?
That might be a myth. That might not be true.
Are you sure we can just spread that?
Well, someone will write in.
Someone will check that.
We're not like the Catholic Church. We won't say, well, maybe he said it when no one was listening.
Please write in and correct us.
We will cop to that in a second. But I think it was up on Eisner's wall.
Yeah.
Eisner had a big poster up that said, Walt Disney, those people will never work here. Good enough for you, you coffin bastard. Choke on those French cigarettes, you un-American, anti-Semitic, Mickey Mouse bastard. Maybe not. I think Walt Disney was great, a great American.
Who knows?
But that's what I heard. Somebody told me that he said that.
Someone will answer that for us.
And he was of a time when anti-Semitism was cool.
Cool.
Yeah,
all the in boys were doing it.
All the hidden boys. You know, Ford was doing that.
Yeah, that's true.
And who was the guy who flew around? Lindbergh?
Lindbergh, yeah.
Yeah. That was a really cool thing. Now we know that's wrong, and we can all admit it, because we're not the Catholic Church. The rest is the weasel in the margins.
We don't need to apologize?
We're not weasels. We're not weasels. We say it outright, and we'll say it right here. And we're going to talk about other stuff after this. I've said a lot of stuff that's deeply wrong.
You're going to get us in some trouble.
Not only wrong factually, but probably also wrong morally.
Yeah.
So write in. We'll correct it all right after this. Pen Gillette, here. I don't know who told me that. Walt Disney song or something. You know, as long as atheist women keep calling, we're going to keep taking calls. Let's take Donna on line 6. Let's talk to Donna.
I'm calling from Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
She's calling from Brooklyn.
How you doing, Donna?
Hi, hello. Nice to talk to you. You know,
nice
in New York, you're only on for an hour. I wish they'd put you on a little longer.
It's very kind of you to say, Donna. Thank you so much. Thanks. What's up, Donna?
I'm calling because I am an atheist, and I'm also a funeral director. And I have conducted funerals in every religion there is, and I'm good at it. And I think one of the reasons why I'm good at it is because I am an atheist, so I can get into whatever the family needs. Conduct the service. I was raised Roman fire and brimstone Catholic, but I've done Catholic services. I've done Jewish services. I've conducted Greek Orthodox, Russian Orthodox, Protestant, Lutheran, all of them.
Now, what I want to ask you is, have you done an atheist service?
Yes.
I have
done atheist services, and the one that comes to mind is a family who the deceased liked the beach, and we took them to the beach that night for a bonfire, conducted their own service.
Well, yes. That was cool.
The families that are atheists usually just don't go to church and do their own service either at the funeral home or like that family wanted to go to the beach. You know?
Well, that's great.
Yeah, because
my favorite ones, your screener asked me my favorite ones. My all-time favorite is the Salvation Army. They're actually a church, which I didn't know until I did a funeral for them. And they're the best. They bring a band right into the chapel. They bring the band right to the gravesite. And they do, you know, all kinds of witnessing, and that's my favorite one, I think.
Now, as a funeral director, you're not the one who speaks at the funeral, right? You just do all, you're like the party planner.
Well, I'm the party planner, but oftentimes I speak, and I always speak at the graveside at the interment. I always say the prayers at the interment, except for Jewish, because at the Jewish one, there's always a rabbi there. But at the Catholic ones, there isn't always a priest. And at the other ones, there isn't always. And I have often thought I was going to be hit by lightning and fall into the grave myself whenever I have to say prayers. And then there are some Jewish Orthodox that won't even talk to me. And, like, I have to stand in the back because they don't talk to women.
Yeah.
but I have to conduct anyway because they need a funeral director at the cemetery, you know.
And is this a family business that you have, or
I'm the only one in my family who's a.
How'd you get into it? How'd you get into that gig?
And I can tell you, being an embalmer, that once you're dead, you're dead. I have seen a lot of dead people.
How'd you get that gig? How'd you decide to do that? When you were a kid, did you want to grow up and monkey with stiffs?
No, I used to be a teacher. And
there was such a small difference.
Yeah, the kids in the class were so excited.
It's something that always interests me, and I enjoy. You know, people think it's a morbid profession. It's not. It's the families of the deceased that I'm helping more so than actually working with the deceased. But I am definitely an atheist. Oh, Baptist funerals are really cool too.
More singing?
That witnessing, and they call the deceased brother or sister, and you know, hallelujahs, and they're good.
So you're not just a funeral director; you're also an anthropologist, aren't you? You're studying the different ways cultures deal with death. Well, thank you so much, Donna. Thanks a lot.
And I want to say something about evolution. The reason why they call it the theory of evolution is because there's more than one theory.
Well, there really isn't. There are many. there are many different variations on it, but not... Huh. Are you leading up to a joke? I'm going to let you go.
No, I'm not leading up to a joke.
Uh-huh.
But, like, Darwin's theory of the survival of the fittest is not the only one. Stephen Gould?
Right.
He had a saltatory theory about evolution.
Right. Stephen Jay Gould had the punctuated.
Right.
Punctuated.
So I think that's why they call it a theory, because
right.
there's more than
but
one theory
Stephen,
out there.
Stephen Jay Gould wrote an awful lot about how punctuated equilibrium did not in any way refute evolution. It was just
down
the tree.
Right.
So it is a theory because we're always trying to find big holes in it, and we haven't yet. But there's a lot of variations in the details. I mean, Dawkins and Stephen Jay Gould disagreed on the details, but the idea.
But they both believe in evolution, though.
Yeah, they both believe in evolution, absolutely.
Right, yes, so do I.
Well, thanks so much, Donna. Thank you for calling in. You know, bye-bye. You know, the people that handle like funeral directors like Donna. To me, are like astronauts. You know, they're just heroes. To learn to deal with that grief and to take people by the hand through it,
and to be done at the end of the day.
Yeah,
okay, 5 o'clock. Oh, good, I can be cheery again.
I know.
That's so hard. That seems so hard to me.
Just great. And the people that did, that do care, hospice type care,
sure.
that took care of my mom and dad, are also those kind of pure heroes that just have this kind of level of human compassion for all humanity that just blows my mind. And I know that every time there's some sort of nursing home worker or hospice care person that does wrong, that gets big, big news. But the vast majority, it's not a high-paying field. And the women, and they were all women in the case of my mom, who took care of my mom and took care of my dad, most of them got into it because they were taking care. They were primary caregiver for someone in their family and then found that they were good at giving some sort of comfort to people in toward the end of their life. I just think that the people that deal with that kind of pure grief and deal with it honestly are just the heroes among us. You know, it's really a cliche to say that, you know, school teachers are underpaid and, you know, they really da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I've never felt that. I didn't do well in school. I'm not a big fan of government education. And, boy, this is worse than saying Walt Disney was a Nazi, isn't it? I mean, I understand the sentiment behind cheering for teachers. But they have such a powerful union, and it's so hard for the free market to work in that kind of socialist school system. But the people that I believe are underpaid and undersung. Is that a word? Can you say undersung?
Undersung, you can say it.
Well, unsung. I don't want to say unsung because some people talk about them.
There is some singing involved.
I want to sing a little bit about
that. A little singing.
<bit. laughs> Those healthcare people are really cool.
You know, there's a lot of things you're good at.
Singing for hospice?
Singing for hospice. I'm not sure. Perhaps a check.
I saw a guy, yeah. I saw a guy on the side of the road with a little sign that said, "We'll sing for hospice." I just think those are the people that are great. And I always wondered, you know, when I've had to deal with the death of a loved one, you know, when a very good friend of ours died much younger than he should have, which is to say, he did not outlive his parents. He did not outlive his parents. And he was from a very Jewish family, and because I was a close friend of his, I went through the whole thing, and it was incredible how the rabbi in charge of the whole service was so respectful of the fact that my friend was an atheist and all his friends were atheists, but the parents were Jewish. It was really beautiful the way the rabbi was able to give solace to those who had
the
strong faith, the believers,
right.
And those who didn't. And even how kind he was about not putting the yarmulkes, you know,
because right.
those of us who were atheists did not want to buy into the religion just because we loved our friends very deeply and because we wanted to be part of helping his parents any way we could. And I just really, really respect those people who deal with human beings at a time of grief. I mean, the most important thing, of course, is your family
right.
and your friends. But those who are professional, those those party planners.
I've been to some Catholic funerals, and it's no, they're not talking about my friend. You know, they're talking about their imaginary friend, and it really makes me mad. Uh-huh. You know,
they didn't have any respect whatsoever. No,
they didn't talk about him. You know,
well, the only funerals I've been to have been funerals that were handled very well. One by a rabbi. Mm-hmm. When my dad died, my dad was Christian, and my mom was not. Toward the end of her life, she became atheist, and the rest of our family is all atheist. And he did a great job. He was a friend of the family, and the reverend did a wonderful job of carrying out my father's wishes, which was important to all of us, and still respecting the fact that there were non-believers there. He just told kind of wonderful stories. But I have heard nightmare stories of people who lived their whole life in science and in searching for truth and nothing supernatural, and then they die, and the people in charge of that just give them a huge Orthodox, you know, funeral. You know, like putting a Bible in Mark Twain's house.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
If you go to Mark Twain in Connecticut, I remember going to his house. It's in Hartford, you know, which is near where I'm from. That's what Mark Twain and I have in common.
That's pretty close, yeah.
Pretty close.
Same
Hartford
neighborhood.
To Greenfield, sure. And I went in there, and they had in his bedroom this big Bible open up, you know. And Mark Twain was a hardcore atheist.
You can tell from his writing.
My favorite quote of Mark Twain's is, "And God so loved the world, he gave man ringworm," which is in Letters to Earth. But Mark Twain's house, which is kind of a historical monument,
right?
Kind of. It is a historical monument to Mark Twain, has a Bible in the room. And I went up to the high school student that gives the little tour, because I felt that I could, you know.
That's the person in charge.
Yeah.
hey, buddy. Yo, kid, come here.
And said, why is there a Bible in Mark Twain's bedroom? Because he was a really hardcore atheist, and I believe he said he didn't want that book in his house. And the high school student said, "It makes people more comfortable on the tour."
That's the whole issue with fact. You know what I mean? It's not about making people comfortable. It's about the reality. Come on.
And I have heard since that Mark Twain may have had a Bible in his house because he did do a lot of study.
I have one in my house.
But I don't think it's in. I don't know if I have one.
I have one from our TV series where they actually cut out a bunch of pages so you could hide a gun in.
That doesn't count.
Oh, okay.
That doesn't count as having a Bible in your house.
You can read most of it.
But I wonder about, you know, when Mark Twain was, here's a man who was very strongly for civil rights at a mm-hmm. time when it was really not cool, and a man who was really strongly atheist and a real free thinker, and now you've got some people calling him racist. His books aren't allowed to be read somewhere because in some schools of what they call racist language, and also being seen as kind of this cuddly American who believed in all things that real good Americans believe in. And it's kind of sad. It kind of makes you think you could live your whole life, you know.
Right.
It's like calling Mark Twain, you know, saying, or Houdini. This is the most amazing one. Houdini, who did not believe in an afterlife, and when he said if anyone could come back from the dead, he would, he meant no one's coming back from the dead, including me, and they do these cheesy, horrible, made-for-TV movies.
Seance every year.
Yeah, you know, the seance every year is okay. She never comes back.
Right.
I'm okay with that. That's
okay.
Cool. That's Radner that does that.
Sure.
Yeah, and he does that. I've been to one of them. And they ask us all to make a statement. And I said, I sure hope he doesn't come back tonight because my whole career is invalid. And they do these cheesy shows. There's this horrible show that a guy named Penn Demption, who has the same first name as me.
Which we normally approve of.
Not with two N's. Right. So it's not cool. He did this whole thing, and he has, in the story, Houdini comes back from the dead and dances with Bess because it was a better better ending for his
That's
show.
Good.
And it's kind of like saying, and oh, by the way, Thomas Jefferson at the end of his life was a socialist. You know, he went for the monarchy. He was
going to happen to you, isn't it?
Well, I don't think I'm famous enough to have a biopic, but if I were famous enough to have a biopic, they would have me a fire and brimstone preacher at the end. You know, I'd be talking, Mrs. Pendulette saying, Jesus Christ is our Lord. Hallelujah. And they'd have that whole thing. And like Randy Quaid would be playing me, and he'd be like holding a cross up and saying, oh yeah, hallelujah. See you tomorrow. See you tomorrow.
Dancing with Houdini's ghost.
See you tomorrow.